Hey, it's Chuck Armstrong with Loudwire Nights, and this is Loudwire Nights On Demand. We got to hang out with the one and only Yellow Wolf. This interview aired on Thursday, July 9th. Let's go. Man, I've been looking forward to tonight's conversation. Hanging with us on the show is a guy who is never worried about fitting into a box, always pushing himself, and he's doing that on his new album that will be out this year. Yellow Wolf, man, thank you so much for hanging.
Man, thanks for having me.
So, yeah, before we start, I got to say, I was at the Upheaval Festival last year in Grand Rapids, and you were putting on a killer set. It got cut short due to lightning. But I remember, man, after that, you were partying with fans outside of the festival grounds. And when it reopened, you walked right in back through the GA gates with all the fans. You got frisked, all of it. I got to imagine something like that could kind of be frustrating, but it seemed like you made the absolute most out of it.
Yeah, you know, sometimes it's like, it was just a good day. You know what I mean? I don't know. There was something about the atmosphere of, you know, like we were rolling down the hill and shit, you know, that big hill that was behind the, you know, that hill that slants up the fans were sitting on, and we were just having fun with it, man. I mean, you know, you go all that way, you travel all that distance. The fans are bummed. They're sitting outside waiting for the gates to reopen. I just felt like, why not, man? You know, let's try to have fun. You know, like I was actually down to put on a show in the parking lot, like with no microphone. You know, I was like, but when they opened the gates back up, you know, got to finish the gig, I guess. But I mean, those are some of the best shows, though, to be honest. You know,
the unexpected.
It's the ones that like. It's not the first time. What sucks is when there's lightning around and it's a full cancel and it's a wrap. Everybody leaves. No one commute. You know what I'm saying? You don't see the fans. You don't see. It's just over. And that happened to me, unfortunately, at one of the biggest opening slots that I've ever had in my career is main stage direct support for Judas Priest. Mm. And we were about to play and... lightning came in and it was over. We didn't get to play. Judas Priest didn't get to play. The festival was done. It was over.
Man.
So this time I had a little fun with it, you know? So.
Yeah. No, yeah. I love that, man. Well, and yeah, I mean, you talk about a festival, you know, as direct support for Priest. You played Upheaval last year. You're playing Rocklahoma this year. What's it like for you being part of big festivals like that, that are, you know, that are generally focused on hard rock, heavy music, that kind of thing, but you're bringing your show to the stage. I mean, what's that like for you?
Well, I think that, you know, I've made it clear over the years who my influencers were, you know, growing up. And I have fans that show up and like to my shows with like Primus shirts or Megadeth or NWA, or just because they know I like it and just because they know we're into the same thing. And and that's how I came up, man. When I was going to shows, you know, my first show I think was at a amphitheater here in Nashville, Tennessee. One of my first shows. Let me go back. I've been at shows since I was a little boy because my mother was married. Was her first long-term boyfriend was Light and Sound for Aerosmith and REO Speedwagon and 10,000 Maniacs and blah blah blah. And then her husband for the next 7 years was Randy Travis's stage manager. So I literally grew up in the industry. But one of my first shows that I went to as a fan. It was, I think it was a Lollapalooza. Mm. And, you know, I think, dude, I forget the rock band that was playing, but it doesn't really matter, you know, the details of the actual bands, but there was rock and roll there. But then I remember the Beastie Boys were there as well.
Yeah.
And then on the side stage, I remember Redman and Method Man on one of the side stages. And there was a mosh pit during their set. And so I carry that energy, you know what I mean? So I don't really feel out of place. I feel like there's a bit of hip hop relief when I'm on there. Cause it, you know, obviously rock and roll fans typically like, you know, hardcore hip hop. you know, like, you know, like, and vice versa. You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of like, you know, we kind of share the same space. It's a certain type of hip hop that rock and roll fans like, and it's a certain type of rock and roll that core hip hop fans like, you know? And so I've kind of found that balance. And, you know, naturally I'm from Alabama, so the South is always going to be there.
Yeah.
You know, there's that part as well. So, you know, I don't know, man. I mean, in this past year too, there's been this like somewhat of I've been adopted by this like reggae community. Like I've done like 3 Reggae Rise Up festivals. I just opened for Sublime in Portland recently. I'm doing a whole cruise with Sublime.
Yeah.
I was on tour with the Dirty Heads. So it's, I don't know, man. It's just, you know, I have a space that's my own. You kind of can't really, really explain it. I guess I could, but it would take a long time to really, really explain it. But I've created a brand of my own, and, you know, I couldn't ask for a better position as an artist. You know, I love my opportunities. And to be honest, hip hop festivals and hip hop, like opening for hip hop acts, that doesn't really work for me at all. It's very rare. Like me touring with Wu-Tang Clan.
Yeah.
Bro, that was so hard, bro. Like the fans are so, they're like very like polarizing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They fuck with you or they don't, you know? And they'll let you fucking know real quick, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I do so much better opening up for Marilyn Manson and Slipknot than I do opening up for fucking Wu-Tang Clan. You know, and like, it shouldn't be that way, but it is that way.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It just, you know, it's just that hip-hop fans are very, you know, they're in or out with it. You know,
yeah.
Whereas rock and roll fans are and tend to be more open to just having fun.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And if you're a good act, they'll give you a chance.
That's right, man.
You know? I've actually told my booking agent, especially with this new phase and going to and new phase in my career, man, it's just like, dude, just book me only with rock. I mean, I think we're direct support for Shinedown this year as well. It's just all supporting rock and roll. That's it. Or yeah. Co-headlining.
Yeah. No, I love it, man. And it you're right, man. It's a good lineage you're part of. Like you think about Kerry King from Slayer being on a Beastie Boys song, or Rollins Band touring with Cypress Hill, or opening for Judas Priest and playing these festivals. I mean, I love it. And you talk about this phase of your career. I mean, you've got a lot to be excited about this year, man. Yeah, the live shows, but also the release of this latest album, 45, which follows last year's album, War Story. How does it feel to have this wrapped up, man, ready for the world to hear?
Dude, I'm like chomping at the bits, man, for this shit to just hit the fan, man. I'm ready for everyone to have opportunity to absorb the record. And you know, this is a record that I'm going to be extremely patient with. You know, I've had like spurts where like I did a month called the August Onslaught, I called it, and I released an album every week that whole month, full length albums that I had stacked up. And but you know, there's a difference between like a focused studio album and like, let's say, like mixtapes, you know? And mixtapes is part of the culture that I grew up in, you know? And
yeah,
writing raps and writing bars, I could do that shit in my sleep. And it's no disrespect to hip hop at all, but it's like raps and like writing rhymes and stuff, I'm a master at that. Like I could do that shit. I mean, it's like, I'm probably one of the fastest writers maybe ever. You know what I mean? I can write bars like that. You know what I'm saying? And I've had a lot of times where I'll just write a whole fucking record and run it first take, done, you know? Just cause I've done it so much, you know what I mean? So the reason why this era is exciting for me is because of the challenge to say so much more by saying so much less is a challenge. So when you're singing songs, there's less space for words, like a fact, you know, you can't, like you could run a hip hop record up and, you know, and within 16 bars, you could spit out 100 words. You know, that's the playfulness of the poetry. But when you're doing a singer songwriter project, you have to get to the point in a different way. And, you know, I've been going through this divorce, which has tore me down, man. Like, I love and will always be in love with my wife, Fifi Dobson, well, ex-wife now. But that hurt, it spilled into this record in all its form, you know? And, you know, that pain or whatever, that pain or the trauma of that, not just that situation. It was the divorce and my separation that triggered a lot of other things as well. You know what I'm saying? Some like childhood trauma or it, the record really is about letting go and to stop. The earlier me the earlier me did write Pop the Trunk, right?
Yeah.
The earlier me wrote Crystal Meth. The earlier me wrote Gutter. The earlier me wrote, you know, Outer Space. Like, these are very aggressive songs, but that's, you know, me leaving jail, literally straight from jail to an Uber to the studio to writing Outer Space and using that as a trigger point, where now in my maturity and not wanting to hurt like that anymore, I'm trying to learn how to redesign the way that I create music. I love the records that I've created in the past, and my fans love the records I created in the past. And I think that we've done a good job at keeping the record on brand. But as an artist, I need to find a way to feel better. I can't like continue my life expressing myself through pain in an aggressive way.
Yeah,
because it's not healthy for me mentally or spiritually. You know what I'm saying? So, and 45 is that growth. It's that moment where I've turned the page, and it's also speaking of turning the page, it's also opening up an entirely new chapter of my life. Because once I heard it and knew that I could do it, man, I've got a lot more where that came from, you know, like really that's just a whole different compartmentalized area of my art. I just had to tap into it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So now I'm obsessed with it. You know, it's like my new passion, you know, like writing songs like that. It's so satisfying.
I love that, man. Yeah. I mean, you said you wanted to let this album, you know, breathe and be patient with it. And clearly, I understand what you mean by that now, just the, you know, the catharsis of writing this album, but then releasing it and having other people connect with it probably in very similar ways. Right. That's something you don't want to just rush, or something you don't want to just, well, I'll release another album, you know, a few months from now.
Exactly. That's exactly what I'm saying. It's like, you know, some albums not only take time, they deserve time. You know, they deserve time.
Yeah.
You know, they deserve an opportunity. And people put out so much goddamn music, bro. You know what I mean? Like, how many fucking albums are dropping a day?
Yeah.
It's insane. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, you know, they got some artists that drop, like, well, just out of nowhere, drop 49 songs. Like, what? he did what? When? Today? Like, you're like, what the fuck? Oh, my God. You know? So it's like, in, you know, amongst all the other independent artists, all the up and coming artists, all the quote unquote major label artists, it's so oversaturated that, you know, you just cross your fingers and you hope that it finds its light in between all that. Because, you know, I've done records before that I thought were going to be somewhat of a paradigm shift, and it wasn't. And one of those records is Sometimes Why, that I did with Shooter Jennings.
Yeah.
And it's a fucking amazing record. I mean, like, it's sick. You know what I mean? Like, I thought, dude, this is going to change my life. Like this is it. This is gonna be the move. We did amazing things with it. We opened up for Lynyrd Skynyrd. We played Rainbow Room's 50th anniversary party.
That's right.
We closed the Viper Room. You know what I mean? We played the Grammy Museum, and we did 4 or 5 high end music videos. I shut down fucking Las Vegas Strip to shoot one of these videos, and it didn't move the needle. Like, literally, it got slept on majorly, like, somehow. And so sometimes you just don't really know. You hope, you know. So I really, really just hope that 45 gets the opportunity it deserves. I really do, man.
Good. I love hearing that, man. And yeah, dude, I'm excited. You know, I've gotten to spend some time with it. And yeah, it is, it's interesting to hear you say, like, that paradigm shift or that turning point. You can hear it, man. And then hearing just kind of, you know, what's led up to it too. I'm curious though, like, you talk about the stuff you're going through and kind of that pain that shifted you to writing this album, the songs on this album, the style of this album. What was that point for you though, where you were like, I don't want to do this with aggression. Like, I actually want to let go. I actually want to heal. Like, how did you get to that point?
Well, it was when I wrote Falling Star. There was something about that piano melody that, like, struck some kind of, like, there was a book that I wrote that I used to read when I was a kid called The Rainbow Goblins. And that's why the opening line is, finding my angels, catching a rainbow, colors are tangled.
Yeah.
That's based on the imagery of that book. I used that as a visual reference to how I felt when I was a kid reading that book, how much I loved it, and then how scared I was to disappear from the world as a star just fading away. You know what I mean? Like, so it's like what I wanted was to be caught. And that's when I realized that's what I'm longing for, is to be held, man. Like, hold on to me before I go away.
Yeah.
Like, don't let me disappear, because I'm racing through that atmosphere right now. You know, that's how I feel. And I don't want to be like, I don't want to go out unnoticed. You know what I mean? And I've done a lot of amazing things in my life. You know, I can't complain about my career. It's been wonderful. You know, I've shared stages with legendary people. I've made records with legendary artists. And, but I also feel, you know, you just can't help but to feel sometimes that you're kind of like just falling into this shadow because you can't be placed. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
There is no place for me on, well, then I've hoped there will be on this project, but, you know, I've never been on radio, bro, my whole career.
Yeah.
You know, I've never had radio presence, which is crazy, but it's a fact, because I've been told to my face that I would never be from a person. Well, I'll just tell you right now, Paul Wall, who's on the Grammy board for hip hop.
Yeah.
He said, bro, you'll never be, I'll tell you right now, bro. When he heard Love Story, he goes, man, you'll never be considered for a Grammy. And I was like, why? He's like, dude, this isn't, they're not going to consider this hip hop, man. You're not hip hop. It just blew me away. I was like, well, what about Eminem? And he was like, ah, he's a given. And I was like, they fucked me up, man. I was like,
wow,
damn. So my dreams for a Grammy died right then.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then it was kind of at that moment, I was like, well, it. You know, like, having Till It's Gone out, which was arguably one of the best visuals shot to a music video, and, you know, be at the fucking MTV Video Awards in Austin, Texas, and not even get a consideration, and watch some clown stand up and catch an award for trash.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, so I just kind of gave up on all that shit, like, I, you know? So, but that being said, it still hurts. You know what I mean? Like to feel, I mean, I constantly get told I'm underrated. You're underrated. You're so slept on. Nobody knows, man. If people only knew. I'm like, what else do I got to do? You know what I mean? Like, what do you mean? Like, I'm touring the world and selling shows out around the world. I don't know where you're at. I know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
You know, but I constantly get told that, and it's painful, bro. I was like, damn, man, like all these years of work. So Fallen Star was that trigger point on the record where I knew I had to let go of that and just say it gently, you know? And, you know, that would have came out way, way different 10 years ago. Mm. You know, 10 years ago, it would have been, "F you, watch this," you know? And now it's just like, just approaching it in a new way. And like, I took it as far as to go, I was like, I don't even want to record this anywhere where it's cold. Take me to somewhere beautiful. So we went to the Bahamas to make the record. So we went to Albany. And so, like, so that when I left the studio, if I had to go through something that was traumatic, at least I could walk outside and be next to the ocean and the palm trees.
That's right.
You know what I mean? And I didn't have to walk out into cold, bitter cold Nashville.
Yeah.
You know, and be surrounded by whiskey bars and, you know, all that shit, you know?
Yeah.
So it, like, I took it that far, man. Like, I was like, we need to go somewhere beautiful to make this record. I have to be surrounded by something pretty, you know, like at that, because I'm going to become, if not, I'm going to become my environment, if not.
That's right. Yeah, man, thanks for sharing all that. And yeah, it's an interesting, relatable juxtaposition of that. I mean, I got to imagine when you hear that from Paul Wall or anything that you laid out, there's that level of freedom where you're like, fine, all right. But then there's that level of pain too that you talked about. And so to get to that point of letting go, I mean, that's, this album is saturated in that.
Yeah, that is literally the whole theme. Even that song Gadsden Blue, like, I've had a really personal problem with my town forever. I mean, since the beginning of my career. I mean, they put the cover of Love Story on the cover of the Gadsden Times newspaper, and the title was "Unremarkable Release from Local Artist," which means nothing to be remembered by. And they just bashed it. And that was the biggest record of my career, bro.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, they've hurt my feelings on purpose, like, for a long time. So I got tired of hating them for that. And I just had to go back and remember what I loved about where I'm from. And that turned into Gadsden Blue. And I love that song. I love Gadsden Blue. It's one of my favorite records on the project. But again, it was just, let me remember what was beautiful about my childhood, and let me paint a new picture. You know, let me basically create new memories. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so, you know, even if I have to be a bit fictitious about it, it still feels better than facing some of the hard truths about it.
Yeah.
You know, so there's a bit, there's some of this song that's factual, like very, very factual. Like my mother and her friends were bawling crying because they knew exactly where I was talking about. And, but you know, it's still more relieving and soul healing to take that approach instead of the aggressive approach that I've taken over the years. Mm. I've done enough of that, man. You know, not saying that it's not in me to happen again. I would never say that I'm not going to make another aggressive song for the rest of my career. That's not what I'm saying at all. I'm just, right now, this is where I'm at. And it's helping me get through a lot. So, well, and I honestly, I hope it helps other people get through a lot. That would be the most rewarding thing about this record, is that if it moves people and inspires them to do better or feel better, at least.
And that's it, man. And I mean, that's the power of music. You know it. I know it. Everybody listening knows it. And, you know, easy for me to say, I know, but saving someone's life, helping someone connect in such a deep way like that, man, better than any Grammy award, better than any music video award or anything like that.
Yeah, that's exactly, you know, and that's the realization.
Yeah.
You know, and really.
Yeah.
And like, it's not about record sales, bro, at all. Like, it's not about streaming numbers. It's not about that. Everybody wants that, of course. Like, yes, I would love to see this thing go triple platinum. Like, I mean, what artist would not? But it really is just about giving a piece of myself and a piece of my career and a piece of my art out that is special to me personally, that is meant to connect with people and move them. And if that takes a year or 2 years to come to fruition after it comes out, that's okay, you know?
Yeah.
Because I'm just going to be touring the world and doing what I do, you know, and performing it live and letting it live.
I love it, man. Well, I think we get to chat for another few hours, but man, thank you so much for hanging tonight. Congrats. I mean, congrats on everything, man. You got some incredible live shows lined up this year, this album, 45. Listeners, grab everything you need at yellowwolf.com. And man, anytime you want to hang, say the word. You are always welcome here. I cannot wait to catch you at Rocklahoma in a couple of months. And yeah, man, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, we're going to kill it. That's what's going to happen. Thanks for having me, bro.
That wraps up this episode of Loudwire Nights On Demand. Stay caught up with everything happening in the world of rock and metal on the Loudwire app and at loudwire.com.